Welcome to all of our listeners. I'm Micah Hill, the media editor for Fertility and Sterility, and this is another episode of FNS On Air, where we do the special edition talking about the seminal article for the month, a behind-the-scenes talk with the first and senior authors of a novel or seminal paper in FNS. This month's paper is very timely and topical, The Impact of Coronavirus Disease 2019 Vaccination on Live Birth Rates After IVF. And we're joined by the first author, who is Dr. Jeremy Applebaum, a fourth-year resident at the University of Pennsylvania. Good morning, Jeremy. Great to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And we have Dr. Dara Berger. She is a clinical associate professor and the director of ART at the Penn IVF program and the senior author on this paper. Good morning, Dara. It's great to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So let's dive right in, Jeremy. I'll start with you. So what is the question that you asked, or what was your hypothesis or objective, and why did you think it was important to do this study?
Sure. So we decided to do this study just because there was a lot of controversy, obviously, surrounding the COVID-19 vaccine on fertility outcomes, and obviously a lot of hesitancy that was expressed by patients, and particularly with early introduction of the vaccine, how it would impact IVF outcomes. And so there has been prior work that has looked at early pregnancy outcomes, with COVID-19 vaccination with IVF, but nothing that is really traced out to live birth. So sort of given ongoing waves of the COVID-19 pandemic and ongoing discussions surrounding the role of COVID-19 vaccination for patients who are seeking fertility care, we wanted to see how vaccination actually impacted live birth.
I think this is such a great question that probably every one of our listeners who provides care to ART patients is very curious to see what the outcomes of this study are. So it's probably not ethical to randomize patients to the vaccine or not the vaccine. So how did you go about studying that question?
Sure. So this was a retrospective cohort study. And essentially, we had patients that had previously been seen in our clinic for an autologous IVF cycle, including both fresh and frozen cycles. And we included essentially a cohort of patients that spanned from January 2020 through December of 2021. So captured some patients that just preceded the COVID-19 pandemic, largely just to sort of include a degree of unvaccinated controls that ultimately would have experienced sort of the peak of the COVID-19 waves, and essentially followed those cycles out ultimately.
So Dara, I had a question to you about that. So this is sort of a, the year before the vaccine and the year after the vaccine comparison. And obviously you'll have some patients who choose not to be vaccinated in that second half, but you're the lab director. Is there anything during that time that might've changed in the lab that could confound it? Did you change incubators? Did you change culture systems? Any major changes that might be a confounder in looking at that? Or were the conditions pretty stable in the lab between those 2 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. We did look at that because that's one of the things I look at when I critique manuscripts is what did change in the lab. And we're lucky that during this time period, we did not change media. We did not have a large change in staff. We have a great embryology team, and we were able to keep everybody during COVID and after COVID.
Yeah, so it really sounds like there's not any confounders from just the time frame, which I agree with you is always a question when I look at these kind of studies, especially from the lab perspective, because we know the impact that could have. I just want to point out two other strengths, I think, in the methods. The first is if COVID wasn't documented in the chart, there was a hand review, or if it wasn't, you hand went through it, Jeremy, which I assume is first author was a lot of your role, looking for vaccination status. And if it wasn't documented, you called the patients, you got confirmation of vaccination. And if that was unclear, they were excluded. So I think we can feel very good about the vaccination status of the cohort. And the other things is use GEE models. We know that for regression and other things, there's an assumption that each observation is independent. But if a patient has two cycles, is represented twice, you need to do that to account for that. So I thought the methods of this were really great. So what our listeners really care about is, what did you find? Did the vaccination matter? Did it make things worse? Did it make things better? What did you find?
Sure. So we essentially had noted among fresh cycles that there was no difference in, HCG, clinical pregnancy, or live birth, but actually noted a significant difference in all of these metrics among frozen embryo transfers, and ultimately found like a 2.3 increased odds of live birth for patients undergoing FET who were vaccinated compared to those who were not.
So that sort of gets to my next question. So you found no effect, which is great. I think if there's no effect, we all feel good about it. You should get the vaccine. It doesn't impact or harm things in the fresh cycles. But in the frozens, you found that there was. So it's a two-part question. One, what do we think or speculate might be a mechanism? And two, which group is right? Because to me, it seems like probably whatever mechanism we speculate should probably work for both fresh and frozen transfers. So do we think that mechanism might play differently, or do we think that's maybe just the role of chance as we start to break down our groups into these subcategories?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different mechanisms, and I don't know that we'll, you know, I'm sure there are multiple at play, and I don't know necessarily that we'll be able to isolate any one as, you know, as perhaps as leading or as the most important, but I think of two. I think the first is the role of COVID-19 infection itself, right? And that patients who are vaccinated against COVID are perhaps less likely to get COVID-19 infection or are less likely to have severe disease, right? And we know the role of COVID-19 infection itself on both early pregnancy outcomes or later pregnancy outcomes as well. And so one could perhaps hypothesize that, oh, maybe during the frozen cycles, there was more time perhaps between, you know, the vaccination and then the actual embryo transfer for patients to have, you know, developed immunity. The other that I also think is pretty significant is that it may not have much to do with the COVID-19 vaccine itself, but perhaps that is a proxy for other sort of lifestyle behaviors or habits, you know, diet, exercise, smoking, alcohol, you know, management of one's chronic disease, et cetera, that we know are predictors of better pregnancy outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. I hadn't thought about the time impact or the proxy impact. Those are two very good answers. I like that. So Dara, as the senior author and as the lab director at Penn, what's your big take home from this research? What do you think our patients need to know? What do you think our providers should take home from this?
Yeah, no, I think it ended up being a really great project. It took a long time for us to get through it because, like you said, we did a lot of digging through charts. We were calling patients. Not all patients liked to talk about their vaccination status, which I think was one of our challenges as well. And one of the things that I found particularly interesting and one of the things that I took away was I was very surprised at the number of patients who actually got vaccinated between the start of their cycle and their embryo transfer. You know, IVF patients are often very particular and do a lot of research, and yet we had 108 patients who got vaccinated in the middle. So I think our takeaway was, you know, it was almost surprising. COVID really was an unusual time and it's safe for patients. And I think we did a really good job of looking for health and safety concerns with the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, I agree with you. And to our learners, our residents and fellows out there, if you want to read a good limitation section, read the second to the last paragraph of their discussion, because they really dive into what the limitations are, and not in a rote way, not in the, this was a retrospective data, so there might be bias, and just leave it at that. Like, they actually delve into what they knew, what they didn't know. And when I read that, it tells me that these authors are really interrogating the hypothesis. They're really drilling down, trying to get to the truth of an answer, not to find the answer that they suppose should be true going into it. The second thing I think you did nicely is you tempered your findings. You said the vaccination is not associated with worse outcomes. I think you can pretty confidently state that from your data. And it may be associated with an improvement in clinical birth or clinical pregnancy and live birth. So your data suggests that that's potentially there, but perhaps more investigation. So I appreciate those two aspects. It helps me trust even further, in addition to the fact that you're calling patients to confirm the status, that this data is as accurate as we can get. So my final question, Jeremy, the world wants to know, you're a resident and you've got a first author publication in FNS as a seminal contribution. Can we recruit you to REI? What are your plans after residency?
I'm already recruited, but no, that's very awesome. Kind. Yeah, doing an REI fellowship at the Brigham starting in the summer.
Great. Well, congratulations. We look forward to more great things from you. This is a fantastic start to your career. So, Jeremy, Dara, thank you so much, especially for this contribution. I think this is something that all of us who provide IVF care in the U.S. are very interested to read. And I'm glad to see that at a minimum, there's no negative impact, and there's probably or possibly even a positive impact directly on the outcomes for our patients outside of just their general health.
We appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes our episode of Fertility and Sterility on Air, brought to you by Fertility and Sterility in conjunction with the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. This podcast is produced by Dr. Molly Cornfield and Dr. Adriana Wong. This podcast was developed by Fertility and Sterility and the American Society for Reproductive Medicine as an educational resource and service to its members and other practicing clinicians. While the podcast reflects the views of the authors and the hosts, it is not intended to be the only approved standard of practice or to direct an exclusive course of treatment. The opinions expressed are those of the discussants and do not reflect Fertility and Sterility or the American Society for Reproductive Medicine.